Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Catechesis at Audience. Pope Benedict looks at Christian prayer and the workings of the Holy Spirit in his continuing reflection on prayer in the letters of St. Paul. Bishop warns against redefinition of marriage. British Bishop John Hine looks ahead to next week's World Families meeting in Milan and voices his concern over the British government's plan to hold a consultation on the redefinition of marriage. Church and family policies in Britain. We find out more about the embattled state of the family in today's Britain and explore what the Church is doing to support marriage and family life. And Sudanese bishop denounces bombing of civilians. Bishop Makram Max Gassis speaks out against the plight of hungry civilians in Sudan's Nuba Mountains region, who he says are being bombed almost daily by Khartoum's forces. Christian prayer and the workings of the Holy Spirit was the focus of Pope Benedict's catechesis at the Wednesday General Audience. Charles Collins reports.
Pope Benedict XVI on Wednesday continued his series on prayer in the letters of St. Paul, speaking to tens of thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square for the weekly general audience. Pope Benedict expanded on the previous week's catechesis on the Holy Spirit's role in prayer.
In our reflection on prayer in the letters of St. Paul, we now consider two passages in which the Apostle speaks of the Holy Spirit, who enables us to call upon God as Abba, our Father. The word Abba was used by Jesus to express his loving relationship with the Father. Our own use of this word is the fruit of the presence of the Spirit of Christ within us. Through the gift of the Holy Spirit in baptism, we have become sons and daughters of God, sharing by adoption the eternal sonship of Jesus.
Pope Benedict told the pilgrims that the modern crisis of fathers absent from the family makes it more difficult to understand the profound meaning of God being a father to us. But the Pope said, Jesus himself, because of his relationship with God, teaches us the significance of the word Father and what the true nature is of the Father who is in heaven. The Holy Father then turned to the essence of our prayer in the Spirit, saying that when we turn to our Father in our private room, in silence and recollection, we are never alone.
Paul teaches us that Christian prayer is not simply our own work, but primarily that of the Spirit, who cries out in us and with us to the Father. In our prayer, we enter into the love of the indwelling Trinity, as living members of Christ's body, the Church. Our individual prayer is always part of the great symphony of the Church's prayer. Let us open our hearts even more fully to the working of the Spirit within us, so that our prayer may lead us to greater trust in the Father and conformity to Jesus, his Son.
I'm Charles Collins.
It's less than a week to the opening of the World Meeting of Families in Milan that will be attended by Pope Benedict for its final 3 days. Hundreds of thousands of people from more than 140 countries around the world are set to attend the 5-day event. The World Meeting of Families are held every 3 years and are sponsored by the Vatican Pontifical Council for the Family as a way for families to meet, discuss critical issues and grow in the faith. This year's theme is The Family, Work and Celebration. Among the participants planning to attend the event is Bishop John Hine, head of the Committee for Marriage and Family Life of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. He began by telling me why these family meetings are so important. It's less than a week to the opening of the World Meeting of Families in Milan that will be attended by Pope Benedict for its final 3 days. Hundreds of thousands of people from more than 140 countries around the world are set to attend the 5-day event. The World Meeting of Families are held every 3 years and are sponsored by the Vatican Pontifical Council for the Family as a way for families to meet, discuss critical issues, and grow in the faith. This year's theme is The Family, Work and Celebration. Among the participants planning to attend the event is Bishop John Hine, head of the Committee for Marriage and Family Life of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. He began by telling me why these family meetings are so important.
I think it is always a good experience to get together with other people who are similarly concerned for marriage and family life from around the world. Everyone has slightly different experiences, but also many common ones. And also, I think that they've been working on different aspects of marriage and family life, and we can all learn from each other. But also, of course, you have the lectures and the people who are specialists who are talking to you, and that all instigates further thought.
When you talk to families during the course of your pastoral work, what do they tell you are the main challenges, the main difficulties they face, you know, trying to keep their marriage together, raise their children in the way they would like to?
Interestingly enough, a few years ago, we did a big survey on what it was that families in our church, in this country, wanted from their church to support them in marriage and family life. And out of that came eventually three priorities. First of all, what they wanted was family-friendly parishes, with all that that meant. Parishes which encouraged and gave time and opportunity for families to be strengthened, really, and who had an open welcome, really, for young people especially. Secondly, what became apparent was that families wanted to understand something more about domestic spirituality than the spirituality of the home. And a lot of work was done on that. And a DVD was produced called Home is a Holy Place, which is still being used around the diocese because it sparks off great conversations among the families about the spirituality of the home. Another aspect, I think, really was the whole area of passing on the faith to the next generation, which, of course, is a very, very complicated issue and involves all sorts of aspects of church. And we're still working on that very much and trying to focus a little bit more on family catechesis.
Would you agree that today the environment for the family is quite a daunting one? There are many challenges. I mean, take, for instance, marriage. I read that around a third of all marriages end in divorce. And apparently it has, in the last year, you know, gone up again after several years of decreasing, presumably due to the recession.
Yes, I'm always a little bit wary of statistics like that because sometimes they include second and third marriages being divorced. So you can't be sure all the time. But undoubtedly, there has been an increase and there are huge pressures on families. And I think it comes from all sorts of angles. First of all, young people tend to get married much later than they used to. That's because mostly of their education, advanced education and professional training, and also economic issues. They can't afford to get a home. But because it comes so late, they very often have had already serial relationships. And that, I think, doesn't really help them when they come to settle down. The good thing is that young people do say that they do want to get married. But the trouble is that very often, because of these sort of pressures, eventually they slide into marriage rather than really making a decision. It's a sort of quandary of sliders or deciders. And if you don't really make a decision that this is your lifelong commitment to each other, you merely slide into it. It's very easy to slide out of it. And I think that's the real problem that faces people today.
Staying on the subject of marriage, the British government has launched what it calls a consultation to redefine the state of marriage, which could apparently lead to a law in the future legalising a same-sex marriage. What is the church doing to counter this?
Yes, this is a major issue for us at the moment. And it's interesting that you say there was a consultation about this. The consultation really is about how it should happen, not whether it should be happening. And this is something we have raised very much with our politicians, that this was never in any of their party political manifestos. They didn't get elected to do this, and yet they're suddenly foisting it upon us and just asking us how they should go about it rather than whether they should go about it. And there has actually been a campaign. Catholics have been writing to their MPs and getting varied responses, but there seems to be at the moment a slight intimation that the government may be pulling back from it, not making it such a priority. One of the reasons, of course, being that there are other much greater priorities at the moment, but we will, of course, continue to campaign, because once you start redefining marriage, you're really destroying the home and the family. The possibilities of doing so are immense.
Coming back to this World Meeting of Families in Milan, what are your hopes that it will achieve?
It's always difficult to have very precise hopes about this. I think one goes to a conference like this with an open mind and looks to see what is of value, what is helpful, and what can we give to that conference and from our point of view. And it's very, one cannot determine beforehand what you're going to come out of the experience with, but it, I think, depends upon the attitude you go in with and the sort of mentality that you bring to the conference, which determines what you take out of it.
I was speaking to Bishop John Hine, Chair of the Committee for Marriage and Family Life for the Church in England and Wales. Another member of a church delegation from Britain planning to attend the World Meeting of Families in Milan is Elizabeth Davies, Family Project Officer for the Bishops Conference of England and Wales. She spoke to me about her hopes for this gathering in Milan and about some of the main challenges facing marriage and family life in today's Britain.
My main hope is that the meeting will help us put families really high on the agenda in our own country. It's really great to have a national event, an international event like this, so that we can talk to people about it and just raise awareness, really, and use some of the presentations and the workshops to inform what we do here locally to support the pastoral development of marriage and family life.
And when it comes to the state of marriage and family life in Britain, how would you describe the state of the family?
I'm always an optimist when it comes to family life, because I know that a great deal of family life goes on beneath the surface, away from most people's consciousness. Most of us are truly only aware of our own family life. So when I read the headlines that are raising all kinds of spectres of dismay about the state of the family, I remind myself that my own family looks pretty bad on the outside, but I know it's strong, and we love each other, and we love God, and we love our neighbour, and there is great hope for the future.
I know that one of the issues of concern is that the British government has launched what it calls a consultation to redefine the state of marriage, which it says will lead eventually to a law legalising same-sex marriage. Is this seen as pretty much the inevitable result of this consultation?
I think that the consultation will be very hard to call until it's completed. I'm picking up a lot of messages in the media that actually this is not the time to be for the government to be raising these issues, that there are far more important issues that the government should be attending to in terms of the economy. And so I'm quite hopeful for a good outcome from the consultation. I would also say that in some ways, hard though it is for those of us who really believe in marriage and and what it means for us personally and spiritually, it's actually quite, in some ways, it's quite useful for us to be challenged like this so that we can re-examine what it is we truly believe, so that we can grapple with explaining that to people. And it's an opportunity for us to invite people to engage with us on this really critically important matter.
I know that the Catholic Church is part of an ecumenical campaign called Coalition for Marriage, which has gathered nearly 500,000 signatures to support the traditional definition of marriage. Is this basically the counterattack against what the government would like to do?
I think it's part of the response to the government, but the petition that you mentioned is just one indication of how people feel. And the bishops have done a great deal of other things to support the Catholic population in responding to the consultation. We've had a wonderful letter which was read out in parishes quite some while ago now, and we have developed a website where people can go and find out more information about the consultation, how to take part, and some of the key points that the bishops are raising in their letter and in their own response. And so, as I said, it's been a great opportunity for us to re-examine these issues.
It is a controversial issue, though, of course, and critics I see have described this petition as an anti-gay marriage move. How would you answer those who claim that the Catholic Church is homophobic?
I think that's a red herring myself. I think it's not about any prejudice or anything. It is simply about what we know marriage is about. Marriage is between a man and a woman. And the bishops have stated all of this very clearly on the website. And the consultation, even if the government redefined marriage for us, is not actually going to give people of homosexual orientation any more rights than they already have.
The family, of course, is not just about the husband and wife. It's also about parenting and raising children. And, of course, this is also another issue that where people are expressing concern, you know, particularly after the riots, are parents raising their children in the right way? And I know that you are involved, for instance, in parenting classes. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're trying to achieve?
Well, the Catholic Church, the community in this country, in England and Wales, has been very involved for many, many years now in offering parenting classes to parents through our schools and parishes. And basically, these would comprise bringing parents together to offer them some knowledge and some skills that can help them grow as parents and to affirm them in the good work they're already doing. And we're very pleased that recently the government has decided that this kind of approach is worth their attention too. So the need for parents to be more affirmed in their vocation is something that we as a church have been involved with for many years, but it's now receiving greater attention from our government, who, yes, they are connecting it, I think, with the troubles that we've experienced here recently. But I think it's a recognition that if we are to invest in our society, then we have to invest when children are very young. And we do that best by investing in their parents, who, as we all know, are the primary educators of their children and have the responsibility of introducing them into society and being the place, the home is the place where our social values are learned and passed on in simple ways, but so importantly for the whole of society.
What are some of the other key issues that regard the family in today's society in Britain that we haven't talked about so far?
I think the major challenge at the moment has to be the economy, and that must be on the minds of many people around the world at the moment. I think that we're all a bit concerned. Certainly jobs are becoming even more uncertain than they used to be. And there are real needs out there that, thankfully, the church has great experience in responding to. And as we see that government budgets are on the decline, then they surely must be turning more and more to those of us in the voluntary sector, particularly in the faith sector, where we have such a history of altruism and caritas, caring for one another. I think that, you know, the church in this day and age is of even greater value to society, and I'm hoping and praying that we can be of greater service. and be embraced for that, really.
Finally, how do you see the future for the family, you know, in Britain and worldwide, and how will perhaps this world meeting of families impact on this future?
Well, I think it's very interesting that the focus for this meeting is work and family. And I think it's particularly poignant that it's coming at a time when, as I said, the economies of the world are quite challenged. But nevertheless, we all find value in work and trying to balance the needs of home and work. Those are challenges that are constantly with us as family people. Having to balance the need to earn enough money to feed and clothe and house our family, whereas at the same time, needing that time together that is so essential for the strengthening of our relationships with one another, having the leisure time, the play time, if you like. I mean, this is something that I suspect families have struggled with throughout history, but is particularly important now with so many pressures on family life. And I'm hoping, really, that the world meeting will offer some very profound and insightful solutions for us that we can bring back and use to support our people here.
I was speaking to Elizabeth Davis, Family Project Officer for the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. Tens of thousands of hungry refugees have fled the conflict in Sudan's Nuba Mountains to seek refuge across the border in South Sudan over the past 2 months. Makram Max Gassis is the Catholic Bishop of Sudan's El Obeid Diocese, which includes the state of Kordofan, where the Nuba Mountains are located. A vocal critic of human rights abuses in his homeland, Bishop Makram's name has been put forward for nomination to this year's Nobel Peace Prize. The Sudanese prelate has been visiting several European nations to lobby governments to press both sides involved in the Sudanese conflict to agree to a ceasefire. He told me that Khartoum's forces are carrying out near daily bombing raids in the Nuba Mountains region.
In a time of war like ours, it is very difficult to have statistics. But I can tell you that thousands of people have already died, either because of the conflicts that are taking place between north and south, or because of tribal clashes, as you know, between Dinkas and Nuer and others. Thousands have died. And in addition to that, all these militias that are being supported, financed and armed by the regime of Khartoum.
Is it true that there is also, in addition to the casualties caused by the fighting, a lot of hunger and even starvation among civilians in some of the affected areas, particularly in the Juba Mountains?
Yes, the Nuba Mountains now has become a carbon copy of what has been happening in Darfur. So because Khartoum has closed all the doors of relief and supplies to the Nuba Mountains, so the Nuba are suffering now hunger. Hunger will lead to starvation very soon. Of course, the aerial bombardment on daily basis, it became a kind of a routine now for the Nuba to be bombed every day by Khartoum, conducting them by Russian-made Antonovs or by MiGs. So now the people are afraid. Some of them went to South Sudan, but the bulk of the population, they take refuge in caves on their own mountains. Secondly, with the fear of the aerial bombardment, people do not cultivate. So this is creating a lack of food.
And the people that do manage to escape, what tales are they telling?
Well, they are telling that they are left their families or part of their families there. And they don't know what's happening to them. Yes, they are there in a better shape in a sense because there are many NGOs in that area, whether you say the World Food Programme or Samaritan Purse or Concern, they are all there. The trouble is that in the Nuba Mountains, none of these organizations is operating, and it's only the diocese that is operating, that is, has become a beacon of hope for the people.
Now, I know you're lobbying European governments during this visit to the continent to press both sides involved in the conflict to agree to a ceasefire and, of course, to allow access by humanitarian agencies, which, as you say, is not at the moment allowed. How sympathetic a hearing have you been receiving from the European governments, and do you think they will put additional pressure on the Khartoum regime?
I always try to think positively, and I hope they will listen to my voice. I am the megaphone of my people. And so I explained, without chewing my words, without sugaring my words, exactly what is the situation. And I said, this is becoming a dangerous issue, not only for the Nuba, but for humanity. Because if these Nuba people are wiped off the map, you can imagine the loss of brothers and sisters that they can really be of good and positive things in life as the Nuba. And if people go and try, they protect the elephants and the lions from extinction. I don't know why can't they protect the lives of the Nuba, who are their brothers and sisters in humanity.
What about the Sudanese government's promise to hold a popular consultation on the future of these areas of, particularly in the Nuba Mountains, the southern Blue Nile province, and, of course, the oil-rich Abyei regions?
Have they ever honoured any of their promises? This is my question. This issue of popular consultation hasn't even taken off the ground. Just at the beginning of the celebration of the cessation and the independence of the South, this issue of popular consultation was immediately cancelled, and instead they wanted to have this election for a governor that was brought from Darfur and is wanted by the ICC, and they bring him to be governor also of the Nuba Mountains. Of course, the Nuba said, we are not going to accept this. We are not going to accept what Khartoum wants. The Khartoum wanted that the SPLA in Kordofan, in southern Kordofan, the Nuba Mountains, to hand over all their weapons and to have their soldiers being amalgamated or absorbed by the national forces of Khartoum. They said, no, we can't trust you because you did not honor this agreement of popular consultation. And here we have now exactly the war between the Nuba people and Khartoum forces.
Right, let's look now at the situation in South Sudan, where, of course, as you well know, it's been extremely tense. There's been a lot of skirmishes and fighting. Do you fear the resumption of an all-out war between Sudan and South Sudan?
I don't think it's in the interest of any part to start a whole, what you call, engaged war. Both are going to be losers. Both are going to lose. Both are going to suffer. And who is going, above all, to pay the consequences? If the government of Khartoum, if I call it a government, and the government of South Sudan, they are going to bring their forces and their armies to fight, it's the civilians who are going to pay the consequences. Is that moral? Is that correct? Is that going to solve the problem? Or the problem can be solved as civilized human beings, they sit at the negotiating table and try to take it from there, from the signing of the comprehensive peace agreement, and see the points which were not implemented and try to implement them.
You are often described as a hero for having championed the rights of Sudan's minorities, and you're among the candidates proposed for the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize. What's your reaction to such accolades? And also, do you fear for your life ever?
Well, anybody who's a human being is afraid to lose his or her life. Because life is a gift of God, and we should try to protect it.
I was speaking to Sudanese Bishop Makram Max Gassis. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.